Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn-Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, April the 5th, 2016. This is our 306 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and returned to Maui with their amazing flowing dialogue, and occasionally we hear from Shaharon, using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. And before we get started, I want to thank James from North Wales, Pennsylvania. We all appreciate you, James, for paying to host all of Michael's hours on the internet so people can listen to any hour they want. Thank you, James. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis.
Hello, welcome back to a beautiful sunny day, and we were talking about kilowatt hours and solar panels and electric cars, and Tesla unveiled his third model, his Model 3, last Thursday, and sight unseen, people were putting deposits down. There were over 200,000 deposits, so that's an eye opener for Detroit. At least someone in this country is building a nice car, and I'm sure Americans can do it if they want to. I hope they do. At least Elon Musk is building his car here versus Apple making their product somewhere else, and they could all be made here. But so Michael was telling me about his solar cells, and got his car plugged in. That's really nice. Might as well collect that energy from the sun if the energy's there. But would you like to start off with Kathleen's comment from, we could start there, 29 March. Kathleen from Kentucky, she writes, "Hello and pictures. Hi Curtis and Michael, hope all is well with both of you and that you had a very nice trip, Michael. I'm really looking forward to listening to the new podcast. Also, I have some photos I'd like you to look at, and I'm wondering if the Shaharons would like to comment on them. I took these on the 23rd of March 2016 between 5:02 in the morning and 5:06 in the morning. I've used the automatic enhance feature so that you could see the color a little better. In this first one, you can see the green object passing by the Big Dipper star formation as the moon is starting to set. And it was such a large picture, I just kept the one side. I didn't have the moon in there, or at least I didn't put it on the site. It's on the listen page now. And there you can see the Big Dipper. Looks like maybe you didn't take this with a tripod. But I imagine you took it with a tripod, but you can see a little movement of the stars. And she closes by saying, here are two close-ups from a couple other photos, and here is one of the last photos that I took of the moon. So Kathleen closes by saying, love and joy, Kathleen. Well, I posted one of the photographs, and I cropped out the moon. You can see the brightness of the moon on the left. And Michael thought it was lens glare from inside the lens of the camera, but
no, it's not.
You said the atmosphere.
Atmosphere. The camera took a true picture.
Okay, well.
Yeah. I've seen that with my naked eye.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Oh, yes. And that is a phenomena of our atmosphere. And if it if that does not disappear as, you know, the that what the source of light, which whether it be the sun or the moon or whatever, moves higher into the atmosphere. Right now, when it's low, it always happens when it's low to the horizon. That's the longest distance light will travel through our atmosphere. And if anyone has done any experimentation with light, they'll find out that light, you know, has a tendency to move in not necessarily a straight line, but move in a different lensed orientation. It can be ducted, and it's in fiber optics. And that can happen through different layers, especially layers where the atmosphere is very cold and has a tendency to freeze up. You know, flying up at certain altitudes, like, the operating altitude of a jetliner at 30,000 feet, the air out there is, you know, really, really cold. It gets down to sub 50 degrees, things like that. That's where ice crystals tend to form, or, you know, in terms of a reflective layer. And because of that, there may be different pathways for the light to move, resulting in these types of anomalies. It also can happen at different electromagnetic spectrums, and I've experienced that a lot of times in my microwave radio systems. And these are troublesome because they are the same signal, but appearing back at you because they traveled a longer distance, sometimes actually nullifying the signal, phasing it out. This is highly technical in its nature, but it's a phenomena of beaming through atmosphere, especially layered atmosphere. The common term would be inversion layers, temperature inversion layers, as a weather term. But they create a type of ducting or atmosphere that seems to operate something like a fiber optic. And everybody knows that a fiber optic, you can wind it up in your hand and the light goes from one end and it goes around and around and around and comes out the other side. It doesn't matter how the fiber is because it is directing light. So that's just basic physics. Now, when it comes down to, is there another a ship out there or a planetoid out there? I've been getting this nudge by Ted to break in and let him speak about it.
Okay, great.
Yeah. But I need just a second or two.
Okay.
Yes, this is Ted.
Hello, Shaharan.
Yes. That you might understand the invisible nature of many of our transdimensional vehicles. Earlier, in conversation, as I was able to monitor it, between Michael and you, Curtis, spoke about how some individuals seem to only want to prove that UFOs are real. But do you know, and did you know, that when UFOs of our level of technology are spotted, it is because we want to be spotted. But in times when we do not want you to see us because of its tremendous impact upon the very consciousness of your planet, they're not easily observed. They can only be indirectly observed through various other phenomena, which has been recently photographed by high technology instruments placed out there by your scientists. The observation of these are indirectly because the phenomena recently that was observed of a large spherical shape emanating from your solar, the sun, being actually illuminated by a solar flare. It was true. The spherical shape is a vessel. Again, the spherical shape is a vessel. Meant not to be observed, but was. For those of you who desire to see such a vessel, it was observed, backlit, perhaps, using your present language vernacular, by the flare itself. The sun and all of the suns are directly linked together on a electrodynamic chain. That is why the globular state before suns form are electrical in nature. But once the suns form, illuminating stars, luminous as they are, they become dynamic, connected pathways. And these pathways are used in transport. But the dimensional properties are beyond the dimensional properties that you understand in your normal material worlds. Normal being that which encases you about in both time and space. The higher dimensional nature of the universe can be transporting many other kinds of vehicles, planetoids. These are primarily spheres. The New Jerusalem, which is orbiting Saturn, originally took its form in a, you might call it, a spiritual sense, because that is the closest terminology in which we could say of how it was transported. It was there in its spiritual sense, attracting real material for its construct to make it real and assembling it in its present orbit. Other vehicles are making their way into close proximity of Urantia. Urantia is special, protected, and has trouble. The planet itself is precious, but more precious are your souls developing, and actually the very fertile, life-giving air, you might call it living dust of the universe, actually sparkling out and giving life energy to these more base constructs of the universe. You see, the universe, as you understand it, are all things observable by your astronomers. In truth, the universe goes far beyond that. But in terms of development, the universe in which your planet exists in is relatively small in terms of the location it has and the area of the developed universe in correlation between the observable universe and the occupied universe. What we care about and expanding about, and what really it is all about, is the expansion of absolute consciousness throughout the universe, making it truly a living, breathing expression of the first source and center. Your very personalities are unique in every single sense of the word unique. There is no duplicate of any one of you. How rich and precious are your very souls. Indeed, we follow in the path of the highest order, saying the very same words the universe creator himself said, "We have come to give you life, and we have come to give you life rich and abundant in living, to develop your souls in absolute wonder, both in structure and stress." Yes, stress. But more importantly, that every time that happens and you unite with the divinity within yourselves, you make possible the absolute expression of divinity right in the place where you are in that stress. Therefore, many times you become more divine in that stress if you call upon the name that is already built in you. Yes, these large spherical vehicles are not anomalies. They are actual observations. They are too grand, too large for the comprehension of your mind. To think that it could possibly be larger than planet Earth in its dimension. Virantia is a material world. These spheres are above material. And because of that, their direct relationship to scale is disproportionate to your understanding of reality. Thinking of large planets such as Jupiter or Saturn or any of the other what they call gas giants. Imagine such a non-gas giant, extra-dimensional giant sphere as real. Except these extra-dimensional giants are not simply a globular collection held together by the dynamic, both the dynamics of electrodynamic attraction as well as what you know as gravity. These things are only a idea of what these higher level constructs are about. You might say, not all that is in heaven is observable, and not all that is made by the heavenly is observable. You will indeed find your life impacted by our handiwork within the domain in which you live. But it is for, you might call it, the grand harvest of every single soul upon Urantia. There is more. And the death of your planet is a long way away. And your civilization is being guided toward a grander horizon. A level of understanding that will surpass any of that of old. Your minds will be able to grasp greater things. And if you can grasp even a little bit of the words to describe the extra-dimensional properties that are you being invited into? First, of course, being in a realm which is more than physical. You might call it a spiritually aligned physical. The term Manancho is used. The spiritually aligned physicality is what you're truly building, is what you're truly living for. Therefore, let eyes which be of your own physical observe one day a great sight given to you and given to your planet of its place within the universe. Grand and awakened and alive, readied for the absolute population of much, much more. And in this circulation of divinity, you indeed will, as individuals, attain divinity, true children of God. Be glad, therefore, and do not be troubled in observing phenomena sometimes which may perplex you. The true awakening will come to the entire planet, but it's still not quite ready. There must be a shift away that the souls will be liberated toward a higher development of truth. I will not say much more for now. I bid you farewell.
Farewell, Teddy Abbott. Thank you for coming on. I'm glad you were giving Michael a nudge.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm kind of like go asleep for a while. I don't even remember sometimes what was said. So glad it's recorded.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think they took part of my brain or something. I don't know. But one of the interesting things is our brain are really receivers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, somebody were to, you know, make rewire it for something that could be done, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But not necessarily by our surgeons. It was most painless. Anyway.
So he mentioned spiritually aligned physical.
Yeah, that's an interesting... Yeah.
And I'll have I think
it was even in reference to that sphere that was coming out of the sun. You know, I gotta go find out where I saw it. It was observed and by one of our solar, you know, observing satellites. And,
yeah, the one that keeps an eye on the sun.
Yeah.
And is that GOES?
Like, could have been GOES, yeah, I'm not sure, but it was somebody posted this, what's this, on YouTube, and they didn't have I don't have it, I just kind of lost it. I was meaning to ask him about it, but I never did.
You mean the vehicle that was going into the sun?
Or out of it, actually out of it.
Out of it.
Yeah.
Well, then sun is not a big fireball in the sky if it's going into a fireball.
No, not for these vehicles. I mean, they are, I guess, not the same material. Well, anyway, everybody thinks, well, if anything goes in the sun, it's going to get fried.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's
what we've been taught or told.
Yeah, yeah. But we saw other objects, you might say, working in the sun, kind of swimming in it. And that was interesting because they also looked like some of the crop circles that were coming out just before that was observed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people trying to figure out what they were, you know, but then you find them in the sun and go, oh my goodness. Interesting, interesting pictures of those. But now we've got huge, gigantic sphere come out of there. Well, in relation, I mean, it's sort of hard to actually get an actual perspective from a photograph, which gives you no reference frame except, you know, the flare in its background. So depending upon where it was between the camera and the flare, you know, it may not, you know how big it really was without some frame of reference.
Mm-hmm.
The most important reference was, I think Ted was saying, was something about it being using the sun as a kind of transport medium.
Oh, that was, yeah, what did he say? He said the sun and all the suns are linked together.
Mm-hmm.
Pathways are used for transport.
Yeah. But you cannot use, I guess, just any old extra-dimensional properties. I guess our physical nature won't allow us to be transported in that way, but there are others who are not that level,
mm-hmm.
you know, but are kind of looking for more people of that level, which is the whole project of planet Earth, to become, as I said, the Verondadek Mosai to me. And he said, the purpose of life and all life is to become as I am, said the Verondadek Most High Observer.
Yeah, he says, what you're building and you're living for.
But, yeah.
And also that there are no duplicates of any of you.
Yeah, yeah, that's what he was said. That's interesting because, yeah, we always think about, you know, let's make a lot of stuff. We end up making rubber stamps or, you know, factory assembly line. Every model the same, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or almost the same.
Yeah, they kind of look alike, but we're all different.
Yeah, and I think that's in terms of our, you know, our bodies will decompose, but of who we are. And that's why our life experience, I guess, is rich and important. Well, anyway, moving on beyond that, anything else?
Well, Teddy Attic also said, we have come to give you life.
Oh, yeah.
So if they didn't come to give us life, what would we be?
Animals.
Oh.
Maybe smart animals.
So a lower form of life.
Yeah, I mean, you know, not necessarily, you know, bad. You know, when we interact with other life, let's say we have pets. You got cats.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they're even smarter than cats. You know, they're like other animals, and some of them swim around in the ocean, which is like, you know, porpoise, dolphins, whales. They're smart. They got personality of a kind. You can, you know, they behave a certain way.
And they communicate.
They communicate. And they can try to communicate. There's, in fact, a little bit of anthropomorphism. You know, kind of give them qualities that we have. And that's essentially what's trying to be transmitted. When we do that, when we, you know, we have a pet dog and we put a shirt on him, you know, and then we teach him how to sit down and do tricks like roll over and things like that. We're giving the animal part of our nature and making it more relatable to ourselves. In a sense, the divine nature and the activity that we live is similar to that. In other words, divinity, although in its sense initially pre-personal, is trying to give us part of himself to be actuated, to become alive in our living. And by so doing, we actually become divine in nature. Mm-hmm. And that's, you might call it the program that we're on, and one that is, you might say, facilitated by angelic helpers, you know, that are about us sometimes. Not to make our lives, you know, easy, but, you know, when I was thinking about this paradigm shift before, this year was going to be called the year of the paradigm shift, you know. If people were asking me, what do you think is ahead of for us? It's a paradigm shift. And then, oh yeah, all of a sudden you look at, you know, this person that was considered a clown become a threat, which is Donald Trump for the election, for changing the entire way of operating governance of the planet. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Because when you look at the governance of the planet right now, is it for the good of the people or for the good of the profit engine of the enterprises? For world wars, always been for the economic engine, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
You know.
Hate to say, but that's the truth.
You know, that's the exact reason wars broke out and things like that, and other kinds of other forms of wars, you know, economic wars, or wars in, they call it currency wars, where they play around, and that's changing the battlefield structure. But it is still life and death in terms of the hard sweat blood of people and their purpose of living. It's gone way out of kilter, because does it even come close to matching what the Shaharuns was saying, or even what the ultimate of simplicity of the purpose of life that was given to me by the Veranda Deck Most High, who simply said, it's become as I. None of it points to that. It's all about fattening the paychecks or the real bank accounts or the engine of the corporation. Presently, I think a person like Donald Trump was developed. I need to ask the Shaharuns if he was. I believe he was developed. You know, it's...
What do you mean developed? I mean, I know what that means, but...
To actually develop the wealth he had, because it would be needed. Let me give you an example of imputed wealth, given wealth. Donald Trump wasn't given a whole lot. And he was given a, you know, relative amount of...
Now here, it was 100 million.
No, it wasn't that. It was, according to Donald, it was a loan of $1 million from his father. But regardless of that, $100 million is still a lot less than what he's worth right now. It's something like $7 billion. Mm-hmm. But what his father said about him, and his own dad, Donald's special. Everything he touches turns to gold. You know, the Midas touch. And the Midas touch, apparently, for if needed be to develop something, is easily accomplished if you got divine advantage. But divine advantage is for purpose. And if there is purpose, what could it be? And then you go right here, and it obviously comes out as he is self-funded. In other words, the very corruption or the governance, the modality or the paradigm of governance of the planet, which goes through because of corporations, and which is not living. It represents, it has the right of a living being, human being, you know, as an entity, but doesn't, isn't a being and a human being. And I reflect back at one particular scripture in the Bible, which says that I think it's Old Testament, I will, you know, take away your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. Yeah, here it is. Which is Ezekiel 36:26. You know, a new heart I will give you. You know, I will take away that heart of stone and give you, you know, I'll remove your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. Let me give you the whole. I will take away your stony, stubborn heart and give you a tender, responsive spirit. Okay, blah, 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 blah. But it really comes down to this part. It says, I will remove your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. Now, no human being has a heart of stone. We take it literally. But what does that has sort of like a living right, a corporation, right? They have identity. They have certain rights, and they operate within the framework of law. Mm-hmm. Okay, which are recognizing it as having rights. But when you look at the, you know, the banking institution, they have this facade. You ever go to the bigger banks? They will always want to present themselves with this facade. You approach it, and it's big, and it looks like, wow, well, this building's got, you know, Roman columns and stuff in front of it, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, oh, that's, who could ever bring this down? You know, that's all false. You know, that's all facade. Mm-hmm. But it really represents also what it's made out of, stone. And if you think about the institution having living people who are detached from their own heart, having, you know, I guess, policies and the way to detach themselves from, you know, the problem of feeling for their clientele if they ever get in a jam. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Oh, no, we got to go and take away their property or something like that, or take their farm away, say. That detachment as really a representation of a hard heart or a stony heart. But to take away that heart and replace it with a heart of flesh, now that's changing a whole paradigm. Now that was pretty much the revelation that was given to me and said to watch out for. I've been watching for it for a long time, and now I see it about to happen, you know. And it's like the stony hearts are really fighting hard to keep their way going, their business as usual, which has basically hijacked, you know, governance of our society, our civilization. Yeah. And we may see. And I believe that they also developed an individual, and they have developed many individuals for a particular purpose from, you know, perhaps birth. They have also gone, you know, beyond birth, you know, to track the generations of genetics of a particular individual back to know what this is embedded. I was getting a little short discussion with Ted concerning genetics, and he kind of opened my eyes a little bit about genetics. You want to hear that?
Yes. Is this just now?
No, but maybe it may be good.
Oh, yes. Yes, I'd like to hear it.
Go. Aroksh nahara deyarijaran ke. I understand what you're looking toward. The understanding of how we touch you as individual beings for a purpose, enriching your lives, and if we do develop an individual, how we select them. And we do. One of the important factors of selecting an individual for development to be part of the core, the mortal core of destiny, our spiritual acuity, genetic purity, which brings about intelligence, any willingness to serve. That willingness to serve is important beyond measure. Some of these things can be found in the genetic code, but what you may not understand is much of your genetics built in within the actual structure and DNA that you have are resonant, you might call, to a divine voice. Though we understand much and even do carry life about, blend even, and even manipulate, the ultimate of ultimates is that your genome and all genome of life, especially that which is absolutely resonant to the divine voice, is highly prized. There is and are many that are not. And as a result, the divine voice, the thought adjuster, is found no place in such individuals. Such individuals have another location, you might call it, or place in the domain in which we call our universe. Yours, however, has a very interesting a mix. The development and structure sometimes is ordered in such a way that even personal experience of previous generations developed specialties, insight, and wisdom can be passed on from generation to generation through genetics. How is this possible, you say? You come into life as a blank slate. Nothing written in an empty brain, you say. That is true, but not true. Because the genetics allows for resonance with the source of wisdom. You might say the key or pre-keying to that voice is built into the genetics. So we do use genetics to help select individuals. When individuals are chosen for this, they are chosen on some parts because of genetics, on other parts because of the most precious, the willingness to serve. The next point in which you would like to know and may need to know is that when both are brought into play, the dynamic and active assistance can be brought about. In other words, we find it easy to guide such an individual toward their higher destiny, which may only mean one area. Others have a huge area of change that they are to implement. Others may only bring about an invention. I hear the name Tesla often mentioned. You know that that is the case with him. Mm-hmm. You see a world that is dark, choked by smoke of fire in the old days of old? No. Because it is something that we used, an individual, attuned, pre-keyed, you might call it, for the purpose of enlightenment. You look about yourself and see how many there were. Maybe you can name a few hundred, but literally there are thousands upon thousands that have been added. Some to give insight and wisdom, others to give warning. You see, it is important to give warning so that when there is a necessity for change, there is also an acceptance of how it should come by. And there is sometimes pain, perhaps even suffering, because of change. This is where the imbalance happens, and then there is war. And then there is suffering. And then there is confusion. Therefore, the higher and more enlightened ones need to multiply. And this is where you stand today. With the ascent of your technology, even my voice is amplified to as many as will hear and accept. Hear and accept it if you desire. It will resonate within the wisdom strands that are built into your very physicality and resonate it peaceably. Bring about that change, you say. We want a better world, you say. You are getting one. You are making one. But not alone. We are helping. This is the nature, the very nature of the handiwork that is you, both physical and spiritual. Your receptivity toward the grander voice, the more divine, brings about the richness of experience and the joy of living and the grand suspense just before the great discovery. We do not want to rob you of that. Although we know the end, your journey is most precious. I leave you now. Enjoy the suspense that you may be in for the great and wonderful and splendid future that is about to take over your planet. I hear Taradik Shahadun bid again you once more farewell.
Farewell, Pediatric Shaharon. Thank you. I enjoyed what you had to say. That's so we are making a better one, and you said we are helping, meaning you are helping. So he said the higher ones need to multiply.
I guess they'll just, in other words, not like, you know, like how we multiply like a herd of animals. You start off with a small one and you kind of multiply them out, right? And you kind of like, oh, you get a little bit better breed, a little bit better breed. But it's not so much in terms of our physical selves.
Yeah, that's right.
But the birth of the nature, the divine nature, which once, you know, more and more are birthed, that is where I guess their greatest joy is. In fact, I think there is in the Word of God, or actually what is called the Word of God, the Bible, in the New Testament, the angels of heaven have great joy for every single soul that comes to what they call repentance. And repentance is a discovery to move away from self-driven pathway to divinely driven pathway. In other words, no longer are you saying, I'm going to just cut out a course all alone. You're desiring to cut a course of life that is, you might say, instrumented and navigated in partnership with the divine, you know. So it's not a solitary path anymore. There's a little proverb, I guess, or something, you know, about footprints in the sand. And, you know, along the way you saw a pair of footprints, and one of them was you and the other one was God, you might call him. And then it represented your life. And every time you came to a hard portion in your life, most difficult, there were only two footprints, only a set of footprints. The other footprints disappeared. And you wonder, where did, you know, just left me here all alone? And it says, the question came forward. It says, why is it, God, that every time my life was going through such hardship, there was only one set of footprints in the sand? And the answer came, well, of course, I was carrying you that time. Yeah. And that's kind of true in many senses, because that's when the acuity happens, the divine embrace even becomes stronger, because there's a, like a trying to resonate, and it does happen eventually. Yeah.
I liked how Shaharon said, you are making a better one and we are helping, and handiwork is you. Well, it is a great discovery, and it is suspenseful, that's for sure.
Yeah. But I would never have known. I mean, you know, I just come off of a trip, you know, it's being, you know, we're taking so many trips around and around the world, and every little corner of the world, I'm, you know, got little things. I thought I'd collect a cap where, you know, places I've been. And my collection of caps has become so immense, like a big pile of caps. I'll never put them on. But they come from all over the world, you know, wherever I could find a hat, you know.
New Zealand?
Yeah, yeah. So I lost that one. It blew off my head.
Where did it blow off your head?
I think it was in New Zealand. I took was up in Haleakala.
Oh.
And it was really windy. And I think it wasn't even New Zealand. It wasn't a New Zealand hat. I think it was Australian. But it was from that island below.
The Tasmania? Bottom.
Taz. I think, yeah, Taz. Mm-hmm. Tasmania.
Tasmania.
Yeah, I think it was from there, you know, wooden boat place, you know. I'm kind of like sad that I lost that one. But anyway, I would have never known that, you know, I'll be exploring every little place over there. Because I said, how can I, you know, with such a limited budget? Mm-hmm. But then there are other ways around it, and I found that to be quite true. You still can. But of course, I had the greatest journey, you know, what, you know, which was from Earth to New Jerusalem, Saturn, which is a big investment, you might say, for the celestials. It may not seem like much, but for all of us who would want to come in some other way on our own, it'd be like impossible, in a sense, right now. To think about making such a journey. But we're actually moving in that direction where that will become very doable. And that's all part of waking up. And before that happens, our planet must wake up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wake up to what? To the divine purpose, which has been hidden from us from generation to generation to generation. By who? By the enslavers of humanity. The original enslavers of humanity that were sent here, and they, I guess, they transgressed their responsibility, their mission. And rather than free humanity on a divine ascent pathway, they enslaved humanity through banking. I was researching a little bit some, you know, original stuff about that in the Urantia book, just curious. Found out that it was Kalagastia, the first planetary prince that really invented the monetary system. And that it wasn't, in a sense, meant to enslave humanity. It was part of many of the systems on other planets for the development of the planet's civilization. But ours has been hijacked. And that's the heart of stone that's got to change. And it's not us that will do it, a heart transplant. It is actually, he said, I will give you. In other words, celestial or the divine prerogative to change that. And it's gone far enough, and now we got to change it. And people will think, oh, you know, it's going to destroy the world, and the whole planet's going to get blown up, and, you know, and may very well be. If we don't, you know, attune ourselves, we're going to get into a bad position. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But once it's done, that would be like Jonah and the whale, who told Nineveh, hey, you're going to get in big trouble if you don't align yourselves, because you're going the wholly wrong way. And then he kept, you know, screeching at them, and there were signs and wonders that were happening, and there were, you know, celestial events. And they got down and changed their attitudes, and it was safe from destruction. And Jonah became like a Riley Martin, you might call it, lost his purpose, and he planted some stuff and drank wine all day long, became an alcoholic. That's what is recorded in the Bible. So much so that a vine grew up all around his little house, his shack that he built. Yeah.
Whose shack?
Jonah's. After he they changed their tune and the devastation never needed to come and it passed over them, but they had changed their tune. So he became like, oh, no purpose. Okay, whatever. Yeah. So even the prophets of God had trouble. In fact, a lot of the prophets of God had trouble. Some of them became absolute radicals. Others became fanatics. And others just disappeared. But many of them, you know, really were pushing the story hard and heavy. Now in the scientific world, we understand a lot more. What would have been considered, you know, marvelous is today would be considered, how do you make that happen? I want to learn how to do that. You know, I want to know what that is, that technology is. And sometimes it'll be explained to us. And in fact, you mean we gotta become an extra dimensional being? He says, yes. How does that happen? And no answer comes. You know, it's you have to find out for yourself. Oh my goodness, that's not nice. You're telling me all this and I can't get anywhere? That's almost like, you know, that's exactly how I felt when, just repeating how I felt when I was given the term, the purpose of life is to become as I am. And of course, I wanted to know, how does that happen? And I get quickly ushered out of the room by the high teacher, the Dano. It was that, was a room or what was that place? I don't know. The Bible calls that the secret place of the Most High. Shall dwell in the shadow of the Almighty. Mm-hmm. That seemed to be a secret place, all right. Anyway, that's a little bit of my perspective, but much more than that was Sharun sharing with us a little bit of what he shared with me. There's even more. There's always more. Some of it, you know. That's why I was told, don't worry, you don't have to learn everything here. It will be given to you. I'm like, what? You know, how's it going to be given to me? Of course, now I know.
Well, what Sharun said also had a lot of meaning to me.
Mm-hmm.
You're making a better one, and we are helping.
Oh, yeah.
Handiwork is you. Whoa.
Yeah. That's good, because you don't
That's
want...
good.
Yeah, we part absolutely well. They're, you might say they're not going to make things for us,
mm-hmm.
you know. But they want us to be discovering it to ourselves. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then he, I don't think he was joking, but he also said, "It's enjoy the suspense." I said, "Enjoy the suspense."
Yeah, you ever watch a suspenseful movie and you kind of wonder, yeah? When he used that term, I was like, "Oh." Yeah, it's like something about to break, but what is it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Trying to figure out, you know. And then, you know, if it's a not-so-good movie, you go, oh, that wasn't so good. The ending wasn't that good.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really good. It's like, wow, that was neat, you know. I didn't even know. It was wonderful. But I believe every time we make a little bit more discovery, we make a little track a little bit closer, and that becomes kind of a rich, enriching experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's emblazoned in our, you might call it, eternal soul, our experiential and real divine fragment, allowing us to have a everlasting, you might call it, and rich and unique nature.
Well, he's mentioning Tesla and...
Oh, yeah, he did, yeah. That's right.
He said, pre-keyed for enlightened.
Yeah, pre-keying or something that the Rancho book used, I believe, or keying, the idea of keying. Coding, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Use keying for, like, coding, too. When we want to have something that is, you might say, hidden, we can... What was that device that coded during World War II that the Allies finally broke the code and allowed them to decrypt, yeah, an encrypted message? And it was... basically a keying instrument, yeah.
It looked like a funky kind of typewriter.
Yeah, funky typewriter, adding machine or something like that.
Like an adding machine or something that they're giving out messages which we can receive also, but we don't know what they're talking about unless you have the code.
Oh, yeah. It's sort of like that, you know, when sometimes he comes on and he speaks. Does it sound like coded messages to you?
Mm-hmm.
Something to me, I guess, inside. I don't always understand, but there are times I understand it pretty fluently, but there are times I don't. But it's like for a purpose. Turn on switch.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
But for Shaharon, he said, "We find it easy to guide."
Yeah.
So that's that's good. I'm glad that they are.
Yeah.
There are
willing, I guess he meant in terms of what he saw, yeah. The precious willing servant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the most important. Then easy, you know, to guide, I guess. Well, anyway, I think we've kind of been through the hour already. So I think, I hope it's been enriching, and please, if...
I'm enriched, Stephen. Especially the second time Shaharon came on. I mean, I liked when he came on the first time. But
that's a little taste of what goes on with me sometimes in terms of just parking myself and quietly wondering.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a gentle conversation that moves back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And... it just ends sometimes. It just, you know, just all, yeah. So I find something else to do. And sometimes it goes on and I fall asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And it continues in the sleep. There's something maybe I want to share with you about that before you end. Donald Trump keeps talking about this high wall.
Yes.
Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Well, years and years ago, a friend of mine, back in 1986, and I was teaching about the end days, you know, and he came to me and said, Michael. I said, yes. He called me. That's how he's from New York. Yeah. He's a tugboat guy. He said, Michael. I had this crazy dream, you know, it was gone. I said, what was gone? The towers, just gone. I said, what towers? The towers in New York. You never know about those towers? What towers? The Twin Towers is gone. I says, well, maybe you're dreaming about something that was, you know, before it was built. No. The other buildings that were built after, they're there. The buildings that's gone. And he came in, and that guy who gave me that information back in 1986, was in this dream walking with me, and we flew in to Mexico, and we landed, and he was telling me about days that he flew a DC-3. He's a pilot also, And he kind of landed on their place, and they had trouble. And I think that's pretty much the end of it. You know, I mean, the story goes another way. But in the dream, I ended up being with him because they captured the plane. So we couldn't get out. We had to run away. Yeah. So he says, we're going north. We're going to go back to the border. Got to go that hard way, you know. So I said, okay. And it was true, this and that. And we went up to the... Then we came up to a wall. No, we came to like a jungle forest. Then we came to a clearing. And on the other side of the clearing was this wall. The wall was gigantic. You know, it was a huge, huge wall. And it's looking up at it, and it's like, no one can get over that wall. That's a wall, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, wow. And I'm thinking, man, this is some kind of wall. And it's, how am I going to get on the other side? It says, I need papers. It says, well, I don't have papers, you know. But there was like a door. You can walk into it, you know, and there's like an office. And it's like, well, let's go. And that's when the dream ended. Boom, you know, walking into the office. But the idea that this is gigantic wall, and the guy that, you know, was with me in the dream was the same guy that, you know, told me about, you know, 9/11 before 1986. You haven't received that information from the same sources that I receive information, but it was given to him instead. Mm-hmm. It's sort of tied together, you know, in a sense, kind of spiritually. But it was interesting because he had also an experience where he was driving this race car, an Indianapolis race car, and it was on the Wild World of Sports. You ever watch Wild World of Sports? The Agony of Defeat?
Yes, I used to watch.
And then, those. You know, there was a ski jumper and he fell down, he tumble. Mm-hmm. And there was also a race. And the race car goes kaboom, and it crashes and burns, and it moves in, you know, mm-hmm. in the beginning of the race. That was him. Mm. He, you know, lost control. He just started to, you know, those cars are absolutely powerful. He lost control. And he was just told to go and just go, hey, give it a drive. Because he's, you know, one of those guys that had all kind of experience, and he, you know, he's a kind of rich
guy. Give it a drive.
Yeah, and it was like in Indianapolis. Qualifying race, you know, and then boom, you know, it happened to him. Actually, the actual race. And he didn't get killed, but when he was in the hospital, he saw a bright angel made of light, he said, of light, luminous being came through there and told him he had another thing to do. He had to complete his life. So part of it was, I guess, influencing me. But him just having, you know, that dream experience, which is a message. And now we see Donald Trump talking all about walls and tall walls, big walls. I mean, it was like looking up at King Kong's wall. You ever saw the movie King Kong and mm-hmm. how that big wall, you know, separated them from King Kong.
Yes.
Yeah, the tribal people. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the impression I had when I kept looking up at that wall. It wasn't like, you know, made out of rocks or something. It was like smooth concrete, but it kept going like a dam, like the wall of a dam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh man, this is a wall, man. We can't climb over this. Yeah, but look over there. There's a door. Let's go in there. His office, you know.
And now he talks about papers to get in there.
Yeah, he needs to talk about getting through legally. So mm-hmm. this dream is an old dream that I had, but I didn't forget it because, you know, it all involved a friend of mine, like, walking together in this story. So anyway, that to me is a hint that Donald Trump will probably get in to make that wall, because somebody will make that wall.
Well, military bases within, you know, our country have walls.
Yeah.
Airports have walls to keep people out, because you got to keep people off the runway and animals off the runway.
Yeah.
And that Alex Jones, he said, well, do you have a door? Do you have a door to your house? You don't just have no door in your house where people can just walk in.
Oh, yeah, that's true, you know.
Because since February, early February, the border patrols have been told to stand down on the southern border. People are just walking in.
Just for a political purpose, then, to say that we have closed border or peaceful borders. Nobody's.
Yeah, I mean, that's.
No arrests.
As long as they don't have statistics to dig up, you know, it's showing how many people are crossing. The statistics show, oh, it's nothing. You know, nobody's coming across.
Mm-hmm.
And you're playing this statistics game, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's typical of lying. And that's another problem with politicians. They don't think that's lying, but that's lying. A very sophisticated way of lying.
Yeah, not telling the truth, that's a lie.
Yeah.
Or just avoiding something.
Right. And that's all part of the paradigm shift.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, wonderful recording today. Yeah. And thank you, Shaharon, for your comments. They mean a lot to me.
Yeah.
And I'm glad he says he's helping. That's good.
There you actually be eventually get a personal guardian.
Yeah, and I'm not going to be uptight about the suspense. He said, enjoy.
Yeah.
Enjoy the suspense. And it is about Tesla.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Michael, and thank you, Donald Trump and Shaharon.
Yeah. Okay.
And we'll Aloha. Record next time. Okay. Aloha, Michael.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye-bye.